And welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio. This edition is the Friday, August 16th edition. Our phone number is 1-800-524-3604, 800-524-3604. Of course, you can drop us an email, send that to midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org. Today's panelists are Mac guru Joel Brovelite. He joins us today, as well as SDN's sales engineer, Amos Asap. Hello, Amos.
Hello.
And Joel Brovelite, you must be sort of on the edge of your seat, wanting to see that Jobs movie that's coming out, the Steve Jobs movie, tomorrow, right?
Today.
Oh, today.
No, today.
What are you hearing on reviews?
Well, you know, I mean, I think the reviews are pretty ho-hum. I don't think it's going to be, a big Hollywood blockbuster. But I read an interview with the director that I thought was pretty interesting. He talked about how, you know, he felt very shackled by all of the, you know, common knowledge that's out there about Steve Jobs. And I don't think he was really trying to make a documentary and was just trying to make an entertaining Hollywood film. So I guess we'll see. I'll get to see it tonight, I'm hoping. People say that they're kind of surprised at how well Ashton Kutcher did playing Steve Jobs and not really playing Ashton Kutcher. So I'm kind of interested in that.
Yeah, I saw...
Plus, it's about Steve Jobs. How can you go wrong?
Exactly. Well, I saw a nicely done interview with a couple of Apple employees from the earliest days, Daniel Kottke and Bill Fernandez, and it was the interesting juxtaposition was Daniel has seen the movie already and was commenting on it, was talking about how good it is, and Bill Fernandez didn't want to have anything to do with it. He's like, I don't want to see it. I don't ever want to see it. I don't, you know, they can't do it justice. And so it was sort of a nice back and forth between the two of them. Kottke talks about what a good job, you know, Kutcher did with the representation. The guy's like, I don't care, you know. So that basically was kind of and the quote I'm going to read here is the attempt to distinguish the facts and longstanding geek legends from the instances of pure creative license. So I think that's a very eloquent way of saying what you just did.
Yes, yeah, that much shorter version. Yeah, is what I said.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm interested in seeing it. I don't think anybody who really, not that I knew him, but anybody that really knew Steve Jobs is probably going to say, or anybody that knows any of the facts is going to say, oh, that wasn't right. That wasn't right. I think that's really hard to do in a movie and actually have it be a movie that has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and a plot. So I don't begrudge it that, because after all, it is a movie. The funny thing is, there is another movie that's being made by the same guy. I think it's Alan Sorkin that did the Social Network movie. And
okay.
It's rumored to be only done in three scenes.
Yeah.
So, and that's probably going to be out, I think, within a year. So,
now, is that meant as entertainment as well, or is that a docudrama or a documentary?
No, I think it's going to be definitely entertainment. Again, similar to the Social Network, where it kind of took maybe a window in time, and or in this case, I think three windows in time, and really dramatizes those, which I think is a smart way to interpret the life of somebody like Steve Jobs. So, obviously that's not out for who knows how long, and they haven't even announced a date on that. But, so this movie will be out. I assume it will be a pretty big draw, as the book was, although the book doesn't have any basis with this movie. That's what the next movie, the Sorkin movie, is going to be more about.
Yeah, I think, you know, definitely for folks like you and others that are big Apple users and followers of the brand and know the stories, I think this is probably a really super interesting thing. And then, you know, I'm just looking to get entertained. So I hope it
totally
is that. And I hope they tell a good story, because I think there are probably some really interesting stories to be told from back in the, you know, the Wild West days of, you know, working in garages and, you know, and the little groups of people that were the computer users back then. And this thing could have went either way when Apple II came out at TRS-80. And I was using TRS-80s in a computer lab with PET Commodore computers at the time. Uh-huh. And this Apple thing came out. Oh, it had color, you know. And so, you know, so I think there's some interesting stories from way back then. And so it'll be fun to see. I'm really kind of looking forward to it. While we're on the Apple wagon here, let's talk about rumors and phones and things. I've got all kinds of people lately asking me about iPhones and moving to, you know, do I do it now? Do I do it later? What's going on? And I don't have many answers for them, but maybe you do.
Well, I don't have any answers, and you'd be pretty hard pressed to say for sure a date. Or for sure any specs or models, but the rumor is that the iPhone, there will be a new version of the iPhone with a 128 gig storage option. There's also rumor of a new color, a gold or a brass case look. You know, the current models are kind of a silver and white look and a black and anodized aluminum look. So maybe the new one might be a gold or a brass. The thing with Apple is, of course, when they do testing and some of them out in the wild, they tend to have decoy cases, so it's hard to know about that. Of course, I think one of the biggest rumors, and one of the rumors I hope is actually true, is that biosecurity, we talked about on the last show, where, you know, the home button might be a reader for a print that would allow you to get into the phone and hopefully add passwords without having to type anything.
Huh. Well, very cool. So they're going to kind of go for a steampunk look on the phones now or something with the brass.
Well, the mock-up I've seen is maybe not so steampunk, but more of a kind of brass look, just really kind of a gold look. Not quite the mock-up, again, and this doesn't mean that it's real, of course, but it looks exactly like the other phones, just kind of a different case color, but still metallic.
Okay, very good. Why the seemingly massive storage on the phone? Is that for to hold more video, or
I assume it's because if the iPhone buyers are anything like me, they use their phone for everything. I take videos. It's the only camera I really use anymore because it's always with me. And it takes, you know, it's a 10-megapixel camera, which is a fabulous camera in my opinion. It takes great pictures. And, of course, I have tons of music.
I was just going to ask you, are you... I was going to ask you if you put a lot of music on there because the guy I talked to yesterday, wanted the larger iPhone because he wants to carry all his music with him. And I said... Really? He said, you're not just going to use Pandora or, you know, Slacker.
Yeah,
or,
I mean,
you know, some other thing.
I don't carry all my music on the iPhone itself. I, of course, use the cloud service, which allows me to, you know, listen to any of the music that I have on any of my devices.
Okay.
And while I have access to all my music, I don't have to necessarily have it all on my phone. But, you know, if you take an hour worth of video at a soccer game, and you do that over the summer for, you know, whatever, 12 or 16 weeks, all of a sudden you've got a lot of video on your iPhone. And I think that allows you to do all these different things that you might want to do and not have to, offload that into a device. Because some people now, their iPhone or their iPad might be their only computer. So I think a larger storage is pretty logical.
Pretty important then. Okay, well. Yeah. We will have to see how that goes. I like I said, I think there's a lot of folks ready to make the leap, and I think it was pretty uncharacteristic of you last show to sort of say, hey, yeah, let's hold off and wait and see what the new thing says, because I think over the years you've been more of a go ahead and get it now because it's great, and if you want to resell it later,
it's close enough.
Yep.
I just think it's close enough where I would probably wait. I mean, that's my opinion. I like you, and I'm sure Amos, get asked all the time, should I buy one now or should I not buy one now? But But yeah, the rumors are pretty strong now, so yeah, I would definitely, you know, if you can hold off a month, you might as well.
As recently as yesterday. And I've got a personally got a sell contract coming up. And it's gonna, I gotta tell you, it's gonna be a big, you know, Samsung's come out with some really good product lately. It's gonna be an interesting fight internally with me, Apple or Samsung. I've owned iPhones in the past. I've had Androids in the past. I've had one now, and it's gonna be a big decision for even me. So Amos, you look like you were about to say something.
Well, I was gonna follow up on what Joel was saying there about the waiting part. And. And even if you weren't waiting for the new one, it's a good idea maybe to wait to buy the existing one today, but after the new one comes out, because the price point is going to drop, I assume, right, Joel?
It usually
does.
Well,
you know, they didn't used to do that, but recently Apple has been, you know, continuing to produce the current model, and it would move down in the price structure. So, yeah, I'd, you know, that's a really good point. If you just want to maybe get in at a less expensive price, that would be the way to do it. Of course, nobody's talking right now about the rumor of the lower cost iPhone, kind of the iPhone LE or the smaller version for the international market and possibly back here. But I wouldn't be surprised if they did that all at one time. So we might see big iPhone news here in, you know, a month to 6 weeks.
And by big, you mean larger form factor, well, just too,
that
as well.
Not only it would be, no, I think the form factor for the iPhone, people are calling the iPhone 4S or the iPhone 4, or I'm sorry, iPhone 5S or the iPhone 5C, that's the what people have been calling it. I think the form factor is going to be exactly the same. They spent too much time and money on that with the iPhone 5. However, if we see another phone, you know, a smaller or a less expensive version of the iPhone to kind of get that market that doesn't want to pay maybe $200 with their upgrade or $400 or $500 for a brand new phone, mm-hmm. but they still want all the great features that maybe an iPhone has. So if that is really true, then we could really see a large iPhone release with several models.
Okay. So the rumors I've heard about a large in the physical sense may not come to fruition. So interesting.
Oh, I don't think so. Boy, you know, again, I've been wrong so many times when talking about Apple. But I would just be surprised if they went with a larger screen. That just, you know, we were Amos called it the Fablet last time or whatever.
Fablet, yeah.
Fablet. They're just, that is just not Apple style, I don't think.
Well, Joel, you have been right. You've been right over the years consistently more than you've ever been wrong. So we'll
maybe. We'll see.
We'll see. A reminder to listeners, if you like a list of the links that we are going to talk about on today's show, we post those right away to the Facebook page. Facebook.com/techradio is the place to do that. Again, this is your chance to call for help on SDPB Radio. 1-800-524-3604 is the phone number. 368-1677 or 368-1NPR if you'd like to send us a text. And our email address, of course, is midday, MIDDAY, at sdpb.org. We have to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk some apps and encryption right after this. And welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio for this Friday, August 16th. Hope you're having a great one, and of course that you have a great weekend as well. Sharing your technology stories and things is what we're here for. If you have a question or a comment, our Facebook page is always open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, facebook.com/techradio. Please join us there if you would like us. If you're a member of Facebook, we're on Google Plus too. So, but you know, we don't make it in there quite as often, Amos.
We don't.
We
should probably do that. I don't think many people make it in there. That's one of those things you really have to be dedicated to in order to get into it quite as often as Facebook.
They're probably just make an effort.
Just doesn't have the reach that Facebook does.
Well, SDN sales engineer Amos Asip was with us today, as well as Matt Guru Joel Brovelight is on the phone. We hope to have Nine Clouds' John T. Meyer join us a little later in the show and talk about an app that he's launched, and we hope to have him on in a little bit. So that'll be fabulous. But in the meantime, there has been a couple of interesting things, I guess. I never found the whole Snowden episode with the flight to Russia and the living in the airport thing to be very interesting. But I guess in the re-examining sort of that case and things, there's been some interesting stories come out of the sort of encryption and technology sort of side of the house that are actually just kind of flat out interesting.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that I think there's a lot of people who are in your same seat that, you know, we know who Snowden is. We know what it was that he divulged. None of us really quite kind of grasp the depth or how, you know, how does this touch my life? How does it make things different for me? And should I really be concerned, or is this things and technology that I don't use anyway, so we shouldn't worry about? But, you know, one of the things that has come out of it is actual applications that we've talked about on this show before that are now going away. Specifically, the one that we were talking about today is LavaBit, LavaBit.com, a website that did hosted encrypted email.
Right, it was kind of the Gmail encrypted version of Gmail.
Right, and it was supposed to be secure. And if you know, if I remember talking about it back in the day, and we were kind of saying, you know, this is for the really paranoid folks, or for, you know, people who might have some really secret information, whether it's business information or whatever, that you know, there's maybe some good business practice in using it. But this apparently was the webmail that Snowden was using, and now the government came to LavaBit and said, give us access or you will be in violation of crimes, basically saying that you're committing crimes against America by aiding other people doing it. Mm-hmm. And LavaBit had the choice of turning over that information and what they say is violating all of their customers' constitutional rights. But instead of doing that, they chose to shut down. So a private company run by a very small crew, but it's been going on for about 10 years. And rather than give up what he thinks is his personal liberties and his rights from the Constitution, he just shut the whole thing down and posted up a message about it on the LavaBit.com website.
Right, and he's in kind of a spot because he wants to talk about this case.
Right.
And he's asked the government to talk about the case, and they've said, no, you're not going to talk about it. And he can't go back and just, you know, strike a match or get the $5 solution, which I thought was an interesting read, which is the wrench or hammer, you know, from the hardware store, mm-hmm. and take care of the problem, because now he's been ordered by the government for that data. He can't go destroy it,
right?
Or then he's in really deep doo-doo.
Exactly.
And so, you know, the guy's got an interesting story to tell, can't do that at the moment, and so he's really in a bind.
He is, and so rather than participate, he's shut down until he can work through. It is actually being appealed. He's trying to get the courts to say that the government doesn't have the ability to do this and that it is infringing on people's rights. But this sort of begs the question then, and we talk about this all the time, this is a in-the-cloud service. And we talk about being in the cloud. And in fact, Joel was just talking about how he uses his cloud service for music.
Right.
Now, obviously, that's a pretty benign use there. Nobody's going to go searching through Joel's Kesha albums for whatever information. But, you know, we do use Dropbox. We do use Google Drive. We do use all of these cloud services that are out there. And which of those companies are participating and are giving that information or making it available to the government? And should people be concerned now that this is actually coming around and being more intrusive to our lives than maybe people had thought it was before?
Well, and certainly for business folk, this right. has got to be a decision that's made, this convenience decision, versus you or I or Joel putting their music out there or their family pictures and sharing them or whatever in Dropbox. But what some businesses are saying now is, now in light of the revelations that have come forth since the whole Snowden thing, they've got to reevaluate the business use of the cloud. And, you know, there are certainly governments I know that have passed laws and regulations, and there's some in Canada, and there's probably some in the U.S. that say, you know, let's just say that all that healthcare information, you know, we're not going to let that reside anywhere outside of U.S. borders or Canadian borders or whatever. That's got to stay here. Well, if you put things in the cloud, you don't know where that's at.
Right.
It's at the most convenient place for that place to put the data.
In fact, it's probably in multiple locations, because most of those cloud services will have redundant facilities.
Right, right. So there's not to be paranoid or anything, but there is a word of caution rolling around right now, saying, we need to look at this again. Yes, it was very cost efficient and it's very convenient, but what is the price that we pay for that on the security side of things?
And I think I think that the paranoia discussion is legitimate in this case, in that, you know, realistically, would the government have the time to go through everything? Are they really looking at my stuff, or would they need some sort of prompting to go looking in my stuff? And there's a short-term solution to this. A short-term fix for those sorts of applications is to use some sort of encryption first before you upload it, so that you're not reliant on that particular cloud service to protect your information. Because then if they do have the keys to the kingdom of, let's say, Dropbox, all they're going to discover is an encrypted document. But then again, I guess you could begs the question, the encryption algorithms that we're using from the software I've got on my laptop to encrypt that originally, maybe the government has those keys too.
Well, we'll talk about that in a little bit here. There's actually an interesting story on a child porn case that's come out. That's the interesting backstory on some encryption and things. So let's get to that. But we have John T. Meyer on the line. He was kind enough to join us today. He's on the road, but we wanted him to join us today for a brief bit and talk about a new app that's been launched. And we want to see how that's going, and maybe you get an update on a Google Glass and some other things. But John T. Meyer, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, fellas, can you hear me okay?
We can hear you fine. And again, we appreciate the fact that you can join us today. We know you're between gigs right now and on your way somewhere else, and thank you for your time. But we did want to mention an app called Full. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, this is kind of our first foray into the app development, into the Apple App Store. And so I'm a big goal tracker, productivity kind of nerd. I really kind of count the things that I do in my life on a monthly basis, on a yearly basis. I'm always trying to get better. And so I kind of had this idea for an app we called Full, kind of based on the live a full life, and hopefully this app will help you do that. And so it's very much kind of the style that I like. It's very simple and very clean, and when you open the app, it asks you to set monthly goals. You know, it might be run 10 times, cook dinner, read a book, call your mom and tell her hi, you know, whatever it might be. You set those monthly goals, and you also set what your tally that you want to hit. So you might want to run 10 times or read 2 books. And then you can just pull up the app as you use it. Then you just swipe, nice, quick and easy swipe gestures left to right to count how you're doing. And then what we kind of created is what we're calling these little stoplight indicators, kind of red, yellow, and green, just like a stoplight, and they tell you if you're on pace to make your goal throughout the month.
Yeah. Is this free, or do you charge for this?
So it's a 99-cent app that we put up there.
Okay.
And it's really good. It's been a really great experience for us just to kind of learn how the App Store works and how, you know, should we make it free? Should we charge 99 cents? How, based on that decision, do people leave reviews or good reviews, positive, you know?
Yeah.
It went live on Monday, and we've had really good feedback. It's actually in the top 10 in the productivity apps.
Oh, my.
If you search by productivity category, you'll see Full in there. And also, if you open your app store and go to the new and noteworthy section, which kind of shows brand new apps that came out like in the week, you'll find it in that section as well. So.
Yeah, I was just opening my app store right now to kind of take a look for that. So you've answered my question. I was going to ask what your feedback's been. But so was this hard? Was it hard to get this developed in Sioux Falls, or where did you who wrote this for you?
Sure. Yeah, I am not an iOS developer, but we do now have an employee from at Lemonly who is. His name's Ian, and he actually was not, as of 2012, was not a developer and never touched a lick of code.
Uh-huh.
And went to a program out in Chicago called Mobile Makers, and it's kind of like an apprenticeship. It's an 8-week program where you learn where it's all about making iOS apps. And so uh-huh. he left in February knowing nothing, came back in March, end of March, and has started making apps with us, started in April.
So Lemonly is this business that does these great infographics for folks, right?
Yep, we're a design company, and kind of the second company that was kind of born out of NineCloud. And
mm-hmm.
I just think mobile is such a where everything is going. We've obviously said that on the show before, and I was like, I want to have that talent here on our team here in Sioux Falls rather than have to, you know, outsource that. So we've kind of created it in-house, and now this is kind of our first foray into seeing how it goes.
Sure. And so how did the, I don't necessarily need to know how the process was, but to create the app and then get it listed, we've talked about how, you know, Apple's a kind of a closed, thing. Was it hard to get that app on the iTunes store?
There's a few kind of waters you have to navigate at first. But Apple's very particular in exactly how they want you to do things, which at first seems a little daunting, but then actually it's helpful because it's very clear and you know what you can and can't do. So you kind of package the app up with the code and the design files, and then you upload it. So we use the Apple SDK, which is called the Software Developer's Kit, to help mm-hmm. us kind of, you know, base the app initially, and then they have a pretty step-by-step process into the App Store. And then you go through, it can take ours took about 5 to 7 days to get approved by Apple.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to go through. They take a look at it. They make sure there's no content is appropriate. There's no ways you're going to make more money than you should, something like that. So we were approved, and it went in there. So
congratulations.
It's been a really good learning experience.
I am, and that was kind of a loaded question for me because I've been researching we at Public Broadcasting realized that, you know, DVDs, physical DVDs, are probably not going to be forever in, you know, viable ways of delivering our TV programming to folks. I mean, we let people buy them, you know, after a football game or a basketball game or after a show comes out that somebody might want. But we're looking at maybe doing some digital delivery, and obviously, you can purchase TV programs on iTunes, but one does not simply... One does not simply take a program and TV program and put it on the iTunes store and sell it. There's a process there, and so I was just wondering
that
from you.
That sounds more difficult, yeah.
Yeah, and actually, you work with one of a few people that Apple has as a partner to get that done, and we'll see if that's ever going to happen, if you can ever purchase a State A basketball tournament on iTunes or not.
Sure.
That's to be seen yet, but very interesting. And so
I think it's an interesting conversation that we could have sometime on the show, just the way mobile is changing the way we do things. I think everyone says, you know, there's an app for that, and there almost truly is. And I think what we try to do with Full is create a simple app that does one simple thing. And I know it's not going to be this elaborate app that you maybe use every day, like you might Facebook or Twitter or some other apps that are on your phone. But I think, you know, now mobile websites are getting so good too that just on your phone browser, making it mobile optimized. So now you have to think about, what is this app going to do? It's almost like a Swiss Army knife for your phone is. So
yeah.
What's the one little tool or trick that this thing is going to do? And that's what we tried to create.
Well, you know, I found, and probably you have too, and I know Joel, I don't know if you want to mention anything here, but, you know, sometimes the best apps there are the simplest ones. They do one thing. You put too much stuff in there. It's kind of like overstuffing a website. You get in there and you're locked because you just don't know what to do. So, Joel, have you tried this app, and what do you think?
I haven't yet, but, as soon as I can get some internet, I'm definitely going to download it and check it out. I think it's great that you guys are getting into that. You're absolutely right. people do say, you know, there's an app for that. That's a saying that Apple used in their advertising for a while. But I have to tell you, I'm constantly downloading things that help me in my life, whether I'm doing conversion for metric to standard, or whether I need to find out, I need to call a taxi. I actually did that last night. I downloaded an app rather than look for a taxi company because it was faster. So they permeate our life, but they make lots of things easier, and I love that.
Hmm. Well, John T. Meyer.
I would just throw out there.
Yes.
Quickly, I'd say if someone is in the listening area is, you know, not even if they're looking to build, an app themselves and just need some help or kind of, questions about how to navigate the waters, I'm happy to help them. So you can reach out to me online, find me, be happy to help.
Sure. And again, John T. Meyer is definitely on Facebook. And if you leave a message for us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio, happy to put you in touch and continue the discussion online instead of on air. And John, thanks so much for joining us today. I realize you got a super busy schedule, but again, we just wanted to get you on today and talk about that app because it's an important thing. So.
I appreciate that. I'll be listening the rest of the way in my car, and then I'll be on the show next time.
Yeah, safe travels, and we will see you again. I believe it's September 6th is the next episode of Dakota Midday Tech Radio. Yes, September 6th. So we hope to have you in the studio, and we'll follow up on the Google Glass discussion as well. We won't get to that today, but would love to have an update, just a quick update from you at some point. So thank you so much, John. We appreciate the time. And again, it is our panelists today, Matt Grew, Joel Brovelite, SDN sales engineer Amos Asep are with us today. If you'd like a list of the links that we're going to talk about on today's show or to actually interface with any of our guests, facebook.com/techradio is the place to do that. Again, our phone number, 800-524-3604, the number, and the email address, midday, MIDDAY, at stpb.org, is the email address. We'll be coming back for the last segment of the show after we thank some folks. And welcome back to the third half of the show.
Third half. That's my favorite half.
Dakota Midday Tech Radio. Amos, you're following the Twitter feeds over there like mad.
Well, you know, it's one of those things that how did we ever learn of stuff so quickly and interestingly? So Argus 911 is a feature of the Argus Leader here in Sioux Falls where they put out a Twitter feed mostly based on things that come off of like the radio scanner, the police scanner, fire scanner, that sort of stuff. But they also do things that are contingent on police briefings that happen on a daily basis. And the three most recent tweets that have come out from Argus 911, and I just thought these were humorous. It was the Sioux Falls Police Department would like to go on record that there was no Bigfoot sighting in Sioux Falls last night. The second one was that a police spokesman said that there was a call for a man in a monkey suit. I don't know what else to tell you. And then finally, a police spokesman says that it's not illegal for a man to be wearing a monkey suit in a park in Sioux Falls. So apparently at Fawick Park, someone was dressed as a monkey, and they called it in to 911.
As Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, technology can provide humor.
You know,
from time to time.
Right, it allows it to spread. Otherwise, that would have been one of those old wives' tales that you don't hear about for a month or so.
Yeah, exactly. Well, moving along with the show, I wanted to get back to the encryption thing because it's incredibly interesting in certain facets how that's impacting folks. And this is it comes out of a horrible story, but it's an interesting read, and the feds have charged a gentleman with child pornography. He's a Wisconsin guy, and they went in and seized his computer as they normally do, and like 9 hard drives, and they were able to decrypt. Interestingly enough. I think it's interestingly enough. He had 2 Western Digital whatever books those are. You remember the Norman?
Oh yeah,
the storybooks or whatever they are. But the two Western Digital external drives, they were able to break the encryption on, and that's what the charges, the federal charges, have been levied against him. And he's got, you know, his tail end is in a sling on this one. And and what they're saying is, and what the government would like him to do, is voluntarily unencrypt the other seven hard drives. And they made an announcement that the guy is going to do that. Well, then the guy's lawyer comes out and says, no. There is no way on this earth that we're going to decrypt those other seven hard drives. And because, you know, this is probably incriminating evidence, or could be, potentially. We're not saying that it is, but, you know, you can't force him or ask him to do something that's going to put his...
Yeah,
that would
be
more of a
violate the Fifth Amendment.
Fifth Amendment, right? Exactly. So this is launched into this this very large Fifth Amendment privilege self-incrimination debate. I guess is what I find is the interesting thing. Not so much the original case, but the fact that you would just mention in a previous segment about that the government, you know, they can roll in and kind of crack this and crack that, and you know, there is encryption that's going to take the power of the sun for a magnitude of time to crack, and that, you know, if the person that's encrypted it has done a good enough job, a long enough key, people probably aren't going to get to that information.
Probably not. And that same story that I was reading said that the government had spent about 4 months trying to decrypt those hard drives that they haven't gotten access to. So they don't have backdoor access to that particular encryption, whatever it happens to be. I don't know if it's proprietary. I don't know if it's something that's open and available to everybody, but they haven't been able to get into those. But it would seem, you know, where is the line that we can force people to decrypt something? And at this point, it seems to me like a moot point. Anyway, they have enough evidence against him to prosecute him. Why are they going after more? Is 100 years in jail versus 200 years in jail really that big a difference?
Well, I guess what the people are saying is there may be images on those hard drives that may help in other cases. Mm. So there are victims that could be helped because these things were decrypted and they were found out what the identities of these people are and so on and so on. So I guess the greater good sort of argument, I don't know.
What's the consequences if he doesn't decrypt them, I wonder?
Well, I don't think there
More
are.
Jail? I don't know, but it's an interesting debate, for
but
sure.
The consequences if he does decrypt them voluntarily, is that somehow more lenient sentence, or does he get to plead a lesser charge, or I don't know. But again, incredibly interesting discussion around this. And then, you know, the conspiracy theory in me says, well, is there something about the Western Digital My Book Essential that so is there a backdoor or something,
right?
Or why were they, you know, two of the seven or two of the nine were this, and those were the two that were able to be decrypted? So
was there a backdoor? Did it just use lower quality encryption, maybe a smaller key, maybe something that had a known vulnerability in it?
Okay.
Lots of questions on that.
I'll say, so a lawyer that's listening says, as a lawyer, I feel, this is Nick, and thank you so much, Nick, for pointing this out. As a lawyer, I feel I should correct you on one point. The Fifth Amendment prohibition against forcing self-incrimination is not a right, is a right, not a privilege. So it can't be just be arbitrarily denied. They can ask him to decrypt them, but he doesn't have to. And so, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Not as a lawyer, but because I am not one.
Well, it makes sense to me.
And so, thank you, Nick, for helping point that out. And again, just I bring it up not as a finger pointing thing or not as any other thing other than it's an interesting tech story from this week. That I thought maybe the listeners in the show would care to discuss as well. But anyway, let's move on. A reminder to listeners, if you'd like a list of the links that we talk about on today's show, we're going to post them to the web shortly after the show notes. Hit the Facebook page at facebook.com/techradio. There are some encryption features that are built in now on many computers. that allow people, and you're sitting with an HP computer, and I'm sitting here with an HP laptop as well. And when I installed, or when I first fired up Windows, it asked me if I wanted to use those encryption services mm-hmm. on my laptop.
BitLocker.
Okay, is that what that's called?
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
So I am using BitLocker with this laptop, and I guess what I was hoping would happen is the bad guys would not be able to steal this laptop, pull the hard drive out, stick it in another computer, and be able to do anything with it. Is that what I can reasonably assume?
And I think that's, you know, when you first talk about encryption and why you would do it, especially on laptops like ours, you know, if we set this down at a coffee shop and we walk away from it, there's always been the security kind of prevailing thought that if someone has physical access to a device, you know, your passwords are basically worthless, like your Windows login password and that sort of stuff.
Okay.
They can get the data. So that's why you do the encryption, is to keep them from getting that. And I think that's, for all intents and purposes, what that was meant for. But some people will have the idea of, well, if I'm not doing anything wrong, why should I be concerned if the government can see it anyway? But what if there were things where there were instances where someone was working on maybe exposing some corruption, or maybe making information available? I guess Snowden's the perfect example of something the government was doing that may be illegal, that may be not well known. And in the time that it takes them to gather that information and get it sent out to whoever, they want to make sure that they're not discovered or found out, because that would ruin their whole plan. So now if the government has those back doors, you know, that's one of the things that could cause an issue there. And whether they have back doors to the BitLocker, the Microsoft version, whether they have back doors to Google or Dropbox or whatever, who knows? I guess we'll have to see if anything like that comes out, but it could be interesting.
By the way, I think you just gave Nick indigestion when you said that, if I don't have anything to hide,
right?
You know, what's the problem?
Right.
I think.
Right. Well, no. Well, some people say that.
I think smoke just came out of Nick's
right,
ears. But,
absolutely.
As a lawyer, but I think folks are, if anything, folks are becoming more concerned or actually probably educating themselves in this area more now than ever before. There's more stories, there's more highlights. We're certainly talking about it on today's show, and we're in South Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
Let's, put two and two together here. This is an interesting thing that makes people sit up and pay attention and wonder, okay, it happens here, it could happen here. We're all sort of users in the big scheme of things of technology, and so it affects everyone geographically the same.
Right, right.
And very interesting, very interesting. Joel, anything to kick in on this? We don't mean to ignore you today.
No, that's okay. I'm definitely not a lawyer, so that's definitely not my area. I tend to fall more towards the there is no privacy anyway, so don't bother trying to protect it. And I think as we go forward, there's going to be less and less in that. I don't see really an option where people are going to be able to keep their information private, even to the level we have it private now. I think it's just going to get more and more public, and people are going to have to learn how to deal with that. That's my opinion.
So you think it's going to get worse, not better?
Well, I don't know how it gets better. I mean, once something's on the internet, it's on the internet, and there's no erasing things from the internet, or there's no erasing things from networks. There's echoes of information. You know, Facebook can go and erase somebody's account completely in all the history, and all of that information still up there. I just don't see a way. I think people are going to have to give control of their information, at least to a certain extent, more and more. And to be honest with you, mm-hmm. the more products like Google Glass that come out, or these great phones, or GPS in your car, or things like that, the more of those come out, the happier we'll be to let some of that control go. You know, you think people that are really young, in their 20s or under, they don't know a life where,
you know, the most information about you was what was in the phone book. They don't know a life like that.
And so, you don't think there's going to be a subsequent backlash of, you know, because let's be frank. I mean, there's not everybody has a Facebook account or wants one. And specifically for the reason that they want their privacy. They revel in their privacy. It's an important thing to them.
Yeah, I agree. But I just don't see a way that that's going to be compatible with modern life. I just don't. And whether there's a backlash or not, I don't. I mean, you can't walk it back, and it will never be able to be walked back. So I just don't see. I just don't. My personal opinion is I don't see that. I don't see that happen. And I think every time a new article comes out or a new story, just further proves that. So I think we're going to have to get used to a certain amount of private data just kind of being public. And if we don't want something public, then, you know, you're going to have to be very careful with your information.
Well,
and not sign up for things. But I just don't see how that's really going to actually work out, honestly.
Yeah, I wonder how it's going to shape, the future of cloud. There are articles out there from folks saying that are starting to move away from it, and there's been, I don't want to call it a backlash, that's probably an overused word, but there are people reexamining security issues and privacy issues and other things based on what's happening in real life to people. And certainly, I don't know, how this all fits into it, but there seems to be, a lot of hacking going on with banking and credit cards and things, and that's a huge business, in the billions, and maybe we should touch on that in another show. We're coming down to the end of this one, but maybe that's a topic for another show. Is history or privacy and other concerns financially and other personal data that you don't want shared. But again, to be productive, if you want to check that bank account or you need to, you need to make that car payment, so you got to transfer some money. It's a lot easier to log in with your computer than it is to run over to the bank.
Go ahead.
Oh, one of the axioms I was taught a long, long time ago when I first started getting interested in anything computer, IT, internet related was that you have security and you have convenience, and they are on opposite ends of the spectrum. And like you say, if you want to make a transfer to pay your car payment, it's more convenient to log into your bank and hit send. But at the same time, you have to have all that information put out there and made available to the bank for sure, and then plus anybody else who might need access to it to make that transaction happen. On the other side of the spectrum, you could deal in all cash that you keep underneath your bed, and nobody else can really get to it. Nobody's going to hack your mattress. But walking cash to the GMAC dealership or financial institution is very inconvenient, and that's just the way things are.
Certainly not without a security risk as well, but
exactly, totally different security risk.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe this is a topic for another show, and perhaps September 6th. I don't know, but our only tech radio of the month of September is September 6th. So we'll try to make that a good one, and we hope people will mark that on their calendar and join us then. We hope to have the rest of the crew with us if it's convenient and there are no fires to put out or servers that are down or other things that impact the guests on this show. So again, September 6th, the next Dakota Midday Tech Radio, if you'd please join us.
Actually, real quick, this just happened to pop up in my newsfeed. The NSA is going to cut their system administrators by 90% based on the fact that Snowden leaked that information. They're going to reduce the people who have access to it by 90% to keep that from happening again.
Well, we'll certainly follow that and maybe update that as well in a couple of weeks. I do want to thank our panelists today, Joel Brovelite, Matt Guru. Thanks so much for the insight on the Steve Jobs movie out today and tonight. Thank you so much for that and for the Apple phone rumors. Certainly September has been pegged as the time frame for some folks on that. And we know that impacts a lot of our listeners because a lot of avid iPhone users out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Joel Brovelite. Safe travels, my friend.
Hey, thank you.
You bet. Amos Asup is SDN Communications sales engineer.
Sales engineer.
Are you one of them?
One of them.
One of a pack of sales engineers. Thank you so much for your valuable time today and insights on the show. We really appreciate your thoughts there as well. Thank you so much. Reminder to listeners, if you joined us late, the MP3 version of this show is available almost immediately. Go to sdpb.org and click on the Listen tab, and it'll take you to SDPB Radio's very mobile-friendly website, and you can listen to this show as well.